You're listening to Flashpoints on KPFA. We turn our attention now back to the situation about Pacifica. The new Pacifica board continues to assert its authority by attempting to disenfranchise the local advisory boards and national board members who disagree with the new corporate vision. In one moment, we'll be joined by Tomas Moran. He's a national board member, to talk about the implications of the suggested revisions in the bylaws. But first, we want to play for you some sound that was sound leading up to Tuesday's WBAI arrest. Now, what was happening here is WBAI producer Emmanuel Goldstein of Off the Hook was on the air when WBAI's local advisory board attempted to convene their regular meeting at the station where they have met for many years. Goldstein and his assistant Alex broadcast the situation live on Off the Hook as cops and security guards prevented the lab members and several listeners scheduled to speak at the meeting from entering the premises. They were barred from entering on orders from interim manager, station manager, Utrecht Lead. Several hours later, 9 people were arrested at the request of building security. Here's that sound.
My name's Ursula Rudenberg, and there's 9 people sitting in front of the door of the station, 10. We're about half LAB, half listeners, and the door is open. We're sitting in front of the door. One person is inside the station and is arguing with the guards. He's been in there for quite a while. And the police are standing at the other end of the hall, and they're discussing something with each other and with the legal advisors, and with Hopte is speaking with one of the officers. Other members of the LAB and listeners are milling around the hall. 2 LAB members are in wheelchairs. We could use support downstairs in front of the station.
Come to the station.
When we come down. We've been in here for about an hour. We're demanding to be able to come into the station to have our regular LAB meeting.
This is Miguel Maldonado from the vice chairman of the board. WBAI is not Utrecht Lead, is not Basic Wash or anybody else. I think this radio station being supported by New Yorkers and all who are members of the radio station, and we are fighting to keep that right for us to have our meeting with their participation. They are forgetting that WBAI is a non-profit organization and it doesn't belong to anybody. It belongs to the members, it belongs to the listeners. And as a board member in my case, I would like just to state that clear, and we are willing peacefully to do whatever it takes to keep our eyes open.
I hear somebody speaking.
Here's the police speaking right now.
Let's hear that.
Essentially by building management to ask you people to leave the building. So we're going to wait another 10, 15 minutes, possibly waiting for the arrival of one of our legal representatives as well as a photographer. But at that time, there is a possibility once we give you the normally the standard procedures to issue an order asking you people to leave the building voluntarily, if you decline to leave at that time, there is a good possibility that there will be arrest effected.
But this is our radio station. How could you arrest us for being in our radio station?
Can you hear this?
Whatever you'd like.
Yeah, we're hearing you fine.
That's the direction that we've been told, right? I'm just trying to make a statement, okay? So thank you very much. I'm just trying to apprise you of what's going to take place as I normally do. Thank you very much.
To let you know, Officer, if I may, special for a minute, that we as the board member and who are follow our bylaw, we say that we're entitled to have those meetings in the conference room, which is inside WBAI, and we're going to stay here. If you give us 10 minutes or an hour, we're going to stay here. We won't move from here because we would like to exercise peacefully that right.
I understand, but apparently there seems to be a little bit of an impasse this evening. So, okay, the police.
We are legally members of the board, sir. We are members of the board.
Okay, the police just walked away right now. They don't want to deal with any more questions.
The arrests are now taking place. There were several dozen people camped out outside the studios on the 10th floor. Within the last 10 minutes, police started arresting people up there. There's a crowd of, I'd say, 50 to 75 people outside the studios at 120 Wall Street, and they're waiting for people to be brought downstairs. There's a lot of chanting, a lot of cheering going on, also a lot of police. No less than a dozen, maybe 2 dozen police cars, vans. The whole situation is really pretty surreal, if you ask me.
And that was sounds from the arrest 2 days ago of members of the WBAI local advisory board, producers, including the vice chair who you heard speaking there. The sound was downloaded and provided by Kelly Ramirez. The sound was of WBAI producer Manuel Goldstein of Off the Hook broadcasting the situation live. I am happy to report that finally, after 2 days, the nine who were arrested were released. They were held in the Tombs in Manhattan at Central Booking. It's a very unpleasant experience. They were released early, very early this morning after serving some time, and apparently, though they are willing, there is another meeting tonight. People are organizing there on the East Coast, and obviously the battle continues on the front line. There's also another battle going on, as we said earlier, and that's happening at the Pacifica National Board, where there are clearly two camps, and those in the majority at this point, led at this point by John Murdoch of Epstein, Becker, and Green, are busy rewriting the bylaws. The bylaws for Pacifica. Now, this is of great concern to many of us because this might empower them to really do whatever they want, including selling either KPFA or WBAI. And there is grave concern from this producer and our guest now, Tomas Moran, national board member, that that might very well be part of the purpose of rewriting these bylaws. Tomas Moran, welcome back to Flashpoints.
Thank you, Dennis. How are you doing?
It's a pleasure to have you. First of all, why don't you begin by telling us about your recent visit to WBAI. You recently made a surprise visit there. Why did you go to the station?
Well, Dennis, a few days ago I received a report that the FCC had paid a visit on WBAI. This is really unprecedented since the FCC had not inspected the station in 24 years. And it was surprising why they would show up right now. And I heard that they had found some deficiencies in the station. And I was very concerned that we were getting some kind of blemish in the care of those licenses, since they are granted to us by the FCC. And I wanted to find out firsthand, since I am having trouble finding out through the channels that I, as a board member, would normally find out of things. I wanted to find out firsthand if I could get some information from the staff at the station. The second purpose was that I, as many of you have heard the reports of the firings in WBAI, and some people have been telling me that they were without, that there was no cause listed in the discharge letters for those people, and I'd heard some statements on the part of the interim general manager there, Utrecht Lead, that they were for cause. So I wanted to find out for myself as a board member and ask Utrecht directly if she could assure me that they were for cause. I would have expected as a board member by now to have been assured of that and to be shown actually some documentation that there was some cause because the process that was followed for these discharges do not appear to follow otherwise the union contract. So I was very concerned that we are doing things at BAI that are violations, and I wanted to find out for myself. So I showed up at BAI, and I found Utrecht in the lobby.
That's Utrecht Lee, the acting manager.
That's correct. And I introduced myself as the board member, and I asked her if she had a few minutes to talk with me because I wanted clarifications on those 2 points, and I wanted to talk to her in private about a couple of other questions that I had about the situation in BAI. And she refused to meet with me and refused to give me the information that I was requesting, so I left BAI without the information that I was seeking.
All right, and obviously we're quite concerned when the FCC shows up at the radio station, particularly in this context, given all that's going on. Now, let's turn our attention to this draft that was written by John Murdoch of Epstein, Becker, and Green.
Before we get in that, let me just clarify that the FCC At some point, we will have to reapply for these licenses, and I don't know when. And if we are not shown to be taking care of these licenses appropriately, we could lose the license to broadcast on the AI. So that's the reason I'm concerned as a fiduciary officer.
And we certainly understand that concern and want to learn everything that we can, because we here at KPFA believe we meet our mandate as a non-commercial, listener-supported radio station, meeting the alternative needs of people who can't get the information they need from the mainstream, and people who understand what's going on here understand that Pacifica is the one remaining alternative listener-supported radio network with institutions within the communities of five major cities. So this is not a programming service. This is a radio network with radio stations, and there is a battle to make sure that these remain listener-supported and remain in the institutions and aren't sold out from under us. And that's why we're concerned when we hear about the writing of a suggested new bylaws. So why don't you just begin by giving us an overview. I've read through these, and there are certain parts of this that I find extremely alarming. But let me ask you, give us your overall thumbnail sketch. What are you thinking as you read through this?
Right. Well, Dennis, I received these Friday night, just before I was getting ready to leave for New York, and I printed them, and I read half of them on my plane flight out to New York, and I thought I would take some notes so that I could, give feedback on this thing. I was alarmed at the process of receiving these and seeing a timetable that seems incredibly aggressive and does not state in that process whether or not there's an intention to try to get these passed at the March board meeting, which would be an outrageous thing to try to do. And I still have not received assurances that that is not going to happen. So for all I know, they're intending on passing these bylaws in the March 3rd meeting. So I started reading through them, and I basically had comments, began to see that I had comments in just about every section. And when I noticed why, it turns out that these were based on a template that is clearly a very corporate style of set of bylaws, in the sense that they centralize power tremendously in a group of people, generally a smaller group of people than you would like, and they tend to make the rest of the board members less and less relevant to decisions that can be made. And I'm going to give you some examples of the things that really alarm me about these bylaws and the motivation that might be behind it, which I cannot assure, you know, what motivates somebody, but it certainly I think the listeners will get the picture. Number one, there are things that are very alarming in that the notice of meeting is shortened down to 48 hours, if by mail. That means that in 2 days, they could call a meeting in Chicago, and if I cannot make it there, then the board members who somehow have been pre-notified or have known that this was in the planning could show up at a meeting, and there could be a quorum without my presence. Further, they can give notice by 24 hours if by phone. So they could say, tomorrow, there's a meeting in Houston, Texas, and if I can't make it, tough. And then further still, a shorter notice if deemed appropriate by those calling the meeting. That's in section 3.10, if people want to look at it. Some of the scariest things, this executive committee, which we know has been making some decisions at this point, leaving out the rest of the board, in the current bylaws, supposedly the executive committee cannot do that. Powers of the executive committee currently are supposed to be only those things that the entire board delegates to them. Well, these bylaws do just the opposite. They give the executive committee all powers of the board with a handful, literally five exceptions. And one of the exceptions here, which at first you might think, oh, great, they cannot sell. Let me read it to you. The exception of what they cannot do at the executive board is the sale, transfer, or other disposition of substantially all of the assets or property of the foundation. So the way that I read that, I'm not a lawyer, but the way that I read it as a layperson is that as long as they're not disposing of substantially all of the assets, they can, meaning the executive committee alone, without convening the entire board, could choose to sell a portion of the assets of the entire foundation. So, for example, tomorrow, the executive committee, if these were in effect, could choose to sell WBAI. And in 2 months, or the next day, or the next week, they could choose to sell KPFA, as long as they are not, at one time, it appears, selling, transferring, or disposing of substantially all of the assets. Now, you would say, what would happen to the money that would come in? Well, the money would come in into the foundation, but there are several other clauses here that are quite alarming to me. The first one is in Section 8.2. Section 8.2, we have all of a sudden the Pacifica Foundation being able to give out grants of money to other organizations. So this allows the foundation, for example, let's say that we just made $100 million on the sale of a license, we could make a grant, a contribution, or otherwise render financial assistance in the furtherance and accomplishment of exempt purposes to any other organization. So, for example, there might be a good organization that you might want to give $50 million to produce programming, you know, that you may want to broadcast or whatever. So the mechanism, at least in the bylaws, are there to take assets that would come into the foundation and grant them out, pass them on to another organization. Another alarming section is the addition of the ability to compensate the board members for certain things, and that is in Section 3.16. And what it says there is that the board, somebody working on the board, could be compensated for for some duties that are carried on in a professional capacity. Now, I don't know exactly what that means. It says a director shall be entitled to reasonable compensation for services rendered to the foundation in a professional capacity. Now, that director, I would assume, would not be able to vote for something if there's a conflict of interest, but they could benefit from it, and that could go anywhere from paying, you know, legal fees if you are a lawyer and you produce some legal work, I would assume. I don't know if it would go to the extent of compensating a broker that helps achieve a sale. I don't know what that means.
Well, let's just say, for instance, we've certainly got those kinds of people on the board. We've got Michael Palmer, who's now the chair of the Finance Committee. Let's just say that he had his way, as was suggested when he wrote the initial memorandum, the very specific memorandum about selling either WBAI or KPFA. Let's just say KPFA was sold for $100 million or BAI for $200 million. It might mean that Michael Palmer on the board might get his 10 or 15% cut of the sale.
Well, I don't want to use specific names, Dennis, because my situation as being on the board is I'm trying to analyze these as a board member. I'm just putting out the examples out there, and people can draw their own conclusions as to what they would interpret from this kind of language. My deep concern is that this type of language, to me, and the reason why I was taking notes in just about every section, are bylaws that very clearly move in the direction of centralizing power in the hands of a handful of individuals, potentially, that are really unaccountable to the listener. That's really what we're talking about. And to me, that's blatantly in contrast with the concept of a foundation that as little as 3 years ago, 2 years ago, actually in 1999, there was a mechanism for the local advisory boards to place 10 out of the 15 board members, that is a clear two-thirds majority, were placed there through a mechanism that was outside of the board of directors in the sense that the nominations had to come through the local advisory boards. So instead of moving back to a model that gives some mechanism of accountability, some mechanism of sharing in the governance of this organization, to the listeners directly or indirectly through the local advisory board, instead it moves it to solidify a self-electing board and to downplay the role of the entire board in favor of a handful of individuals that would be able to make these kinds of decisions. Also, the appearance of this type of language of compensation for the directors, of granting dollars out, and certainly the centralization of power and the amount of power that's turned over in these proposed bylaws to the executive committee are alarming to me. Now, I have to tell you that I just received an email that came to me from John Murdoch, came to the board from John Murdoch, in which he complains about some of the analysis that he's seen on the web, and he says that he urges board members to rectify some of these misinterpretations, he says, that have been made about the bylaws revisions that he sent out. And he says the bylaws do not, for example, and I'm going to skip to one here, for example, he says the bylaws do not allow the executive committee to sell stations, parentheses, see section 4.2. So I would invite any of the listeners to open up the bylaws, which are posted on a number of web sites, and to read section 4.2, which I just read in the a few minutes ago, telling you what the executive committee can do and the handful of things that it cannot do.
Well, I'm looking right at that section 4.2, and I'm looking right at the phrase that is supposedly in limiting the activities of the board. And again, I want to quote it. It says what they supposedly can't do is the sale, transfer.
They cannot do,
what they cannot do is the sale, transfer, or other disposition of substantially all of the assets or property of the foundation, which, as you suggested, means that they might very well be able to sell a station, because that's not, if you've got five stations,
right,
that's not substantially all. You could even get away, make the case that you could sell two stations,
okay,
and that wouldn't be substantially all. And if they wanted to write these bylaws
right,
so that they were airtight, there are many other ways to say no sale, no way, but they're not saying that, are they?
Well, and you know, Dennis, that I've submitted a bylaw amendment every time that I show up at a board meeting. I've tried to get a bylaw amendment even submitted. They haven't allowed me to bring that to a vote, but to precisely say that we're not selling. And what I find from these drafts is, instead of taking that idea and that concept that they felt that I was wording inappropriately and worded however properly they want to put it on, instead what I see is a move in the direction that clearly to me, reading it, I've been in a number of boards and I've dealt with bylaws quite a bit. And again, I invite the listeners to read for themselves and to make their own minds as to what this means.
Well, let me tell our listeners and our engineer that we're going to hold the Momia commentary until tomorrow so that we can just chat a little bit more about what's going on here. But I was very concerned when I heard Clayton Riley, the morning show host on WBAI, strongly advocating on the air the sale of WBAI. And he said in advocating the sale that he was was invited to meet with Pacifica to give his counsel, and that he would be giving counsel to selling WBAI in New York. Now, if they sold WBAI, that would suggest that he would lose his job. But if they sell BAI, they have $200 million or $300 million or $500 million, as you say, reflected in these board, these new suggested bylaws, that those who are in the Pacifica family, if you will, after perhaps these sales go on, have a lot of power in terms of what they can do with the money.
Yeah, I think the message, Dennis, that I want to send to the listeners is, as I've said it before, is we need to wake up and look at where we want the burden of proof to be in terms of who are our board of directors and what are they trying to do. And to try to look at these bylaws and come up with an interpretation that says, oh, these are completely innocent bylaws and there's no intention to do these things, takes a incredible stretch of the imagination. And what I'm suggesting is that even further than that, we should, as listeners, as we put our listeners' hat, and as listener sponsors of this incredible network that's been created for over 50 years, look at an attempted rewrite of the bylaws, which are the governing documents of the foundation with a very, very skeptical eye, particularly in light of the type of behavior that has been carried out. You know, I've heard a lot of stories on KPFA about corporate raiders and the way in which people look at an organization that maybe has a pension fund or something, and they go in there and they raid that fund. And we've heard many stories like that. And I have to say that there is great assets here in the licenses of Pacifica, and they're probably very tempting assets to take for other purposes. And I'm concerned that we look at these things and that we understand that we're going to have to mount a very strong campaign, including talking to our representatives about the concern about these attempts.
Well, let me say that, Tomas Moran, it's a pleasure to have you with us and have you on the board. I want to tell our listeners that we will be staying with this story because we see this as a crucial battle to hold on to these marvelous alternative institutions. And really, the writing, as they say, is on the wall, and we have to watch closely. I'm going to bring some of the legal people back tomorrow to talk more about this, and I will again call Mr. Murdoch. I have called him in the past, and I will call him. He hasn't returned my calls in the past. I will again call him and invite him to come on the air. Some listeners have called me, and some actually got through to Mr. Murdoch at 202-851-0900. I believe that's his number in Washington, D.C., at 202-851-0900. If not, it's Epstein, Becker, and Green. He said, no sale here. These new bylaws say no sale. Well, I want to invite him on the air. I'll call him again tomorrow. Maybe he'll come on and he'll answer some questions and alleviate our fears. Tomas Moran, thank you for joining us again on Flashpoints. And that wraps it up for another edition of Flashpoints. If you have questions or comments, give us a call, 510-848-6767, extension 260. Check us out on the net, flashpoints.net. Thanks for listening.